Right now, you, yeah, you, are probably listening to this podcast in a big coastal city, or at least near one. Most likely San Francisco or New York, maybe Houston. That is, if our analytics are correct. And I'd be willing to bet that you work in or around healthcare. You're also probably young, and you've probably got a little bit of money, enough to at least be comfortable. And right now, you're probably saying, okay, what gives? Why is this databook guy so interested in me? Well, the big theme of this episode, the big idea that we're exploring, it actually has nothing to do with you. It's all about the demographic opposite of you. And on that note, the demographic opposite of me. You see, this episode of Databook is about all things rural, the countryside, the frontier, the heartland, whatever you want to call it. It's America's isolated, spread out, largely undeveloped woodlands, plains. You know what I'm talking about. But there's one thing about rural America that everyone seems to agree on. Its healthcare stinks. Badly. I'm Jack Murtha, and today on Databook, we are talking about how data, analytics, and tech can solve rural America's healthcare problem. So, a little bit of housekeeping before we get going. First off, as you know, this is a healthcare analytics news podcast. You can check us out online at hcanews.com. Databook is produced at MJH Studios in beautiful Cranberry, New Jersey, right by the Turnpike. If you like it, please subscribe, review, and rate this podcast on whatever your favorite app is, iTunes, Google Play. Okay, second order of business. Databook is going on vacation. Well, the podcast is, not me. I'll still be in the office pumping out stories on hcanews.com. But the podcast is taking the next 2 weeks off. Databook will return better than ever, bright and early, on Friday, July 20th. So mark your calendars and keep an ear out for our triumphant return. Finally, you might be wondering, hey, where's the other guy? That other guy's name, by the way, he's Tom Castles. And he is taking a much-deserved actual vacation this week. So what that means is, for the first time ever, you get to hear me, and only me. So buckle in. Just about any way you measure it, Baker, Montana is small. It's about 1 square mile, and just fewer than 2,000 people were estimated to live there in 2016. Baker is also rural, really rural. It's in the southeastern corner of Montana, and get this, it is literally a frontier, still, to this day. And that's a word from the state health department, not me. So what is special about Baker? Well, probably not too much. I mean, I've never been there, never tested out the restaurants, but we are not looking for anything special on this episode of Databook. Not yet, at least. We will get to something very special in a few minutes. Why Baker is important to this episode is precisely because it's pretty much your typical rural town. It's mostly white, it's pretty poor, the population is actually a little bit younger than most of rural America by about 3 years. But what's unusual about Baker is that it's home to a relatively large healthcare provider. That's called Fallin Medical Complex. It isn't huge, and if you look at its website, you're definitely going to see something dated, but it is something. And if you're a Baker resident, this nonprofit provider is a godsend. First, it's a big employer and a good thing for the economy. And then there's this. If medical care is in your rural town, and you don't have to drive something like 30 miles, or an hour, whatever it is, to see a doctor, that's pretty darn good. But Fallin Medical Complex serves many other patients besides the ones who live in Baker. There are 7,200 of them, and they live in 7 different counties. And those counties are in Montana and North Dakota. So the people are spread out. And Fallin Medical Complex, that's their only medical provider. and it's not always easy to get to the doctor. And sometimes there's no doctor to get to. So what do these patients do when tragedy and trauma strike? Let's set the scene here. It's summertime and the kids are out of school. They're doing what kids do. They're going on adventures, hanging out, playing sports, you name it. So there's this one 10-year-old boy, and we don't know his name, but he really likes to ride dirt bikes. Sure, it's not the safest thing to do, but he plays it smart. He wears a helmet. So this one day, he's tooling around on his dirt bike with his helmet on, and all of a sudden, things get ugly. Without warning, his throttle gets stuck. That means the bike keeps on going, and he can't do anything about it. And this kid, this 10-year-old boy, he ends up crashing into the foundation of a house. He's got his helmet on, but the collision still does a number on him. He's knocked out. This nice summer day has turned into a life-threatening situation. So an ambulance comes and speeds him over to Fallon Medical Center in Baker. An emergency department doctor and a team of nurses take him in and they get to work. But here's the thing, they're not alone. Less than a year before this terrifying crash, Fallon installed an emergency telemedicine system. This thing, it's called e-emergency. It essentially connects clinicians in Baker with their peers in big cities. The idea is that urban providers see just about everything, and they see it pretty often. So a doctor in Baker who only treats one level one pediatric trauma patient per year can get advice, hands-on help, big life-saving tips from the folks who really understand level one pediatric trauma. The people who see this every day. And this exchange, it happens all over a camera. They can see what's going on. So when this 10-year-old boy comes to Fallon Medical Center, the emergency department has this camera set up. They're basically working alongside remote clinicians. They're trying to make sure that this kid comes out of this nightmare okay. But that's gonna be tough. His brain is in rough shape. One side of it essentially bashed the other side when he crashed his dirt bike. It's a common injury as far as brain injuries go, but he's in danger. He could end up pretty much a vegetable. So his in-person and remote care teams work together, and they decide upon and deliver the necessary care right away. It's quick, it's efficient, it's snappy. And while Fallon clinicians are treating the boy, their partners on the other end of the camera get a flight team on the phone. Before you know it, this kid is in the air and he's on his way to a children's hospital in Denver. That's about 500 miles from Baker. No one knows how this story will turn out. A week later, the same boy's cousin comes to Fallon Medical Center with a bad injury. She is also 10 years old and her stomach is just killing her. She was walking with a horse, she was leading it, and it kind of got out of whack. It reared up, and the horse, all 1,200 pounds of it, ended up falling on top of this little girl. And what's even worse is that the saddle horn, you know, the thing that you hold on to if you're riding a horse, that goes straight into her gut. So when the girl comes in, one of her family members immediately asks for the people on the camera. The Fallon team already has their remote partners on the line, and those remote partners are already arranging a flight to a trauma center. This girl is in big trouble, just like her cousin was. Everything is on the line, and you gotta imagine that this family is absolutely terrified. But all this work, this technology, this innovation, this new approach to healthcare, it pays off. The girl battles for weeks, and eventually she makes a full recovery. The boy has it a little bit harder, but a few months after his dirt bike crash, he actually walks into Fallon and thanks his care team. The story of these two kids and Fallon Medical Center, it's all true, just like everything on this podcast. We found this story from the Helmsley Charitable Trust, so we want to give a big thumbs up to them. And that telemedicine system, by the way, it's called Avera E-Emergency. So why did I tell you this story? It's not to promote that telemedicine service or to get a rise out of you by describing a couple of close calls involving children nonetheless. I told you this story because of the tech, the innovation, and the willingness that Fallon Medical Center had to accept the future, to accept healthcare in the new millennium, to adapt. Those 10-year-old kids, they got to become 11-year-old kids. And maybe they'll get to become 21-year-old adults, 30-year-old parents, 65-year-old retirees. And that is the payoff that we get when health tech goes into our rural communities. Our guest today is looking at rural healthcare innovation in a different way. It's not telemedicine necessarily. He is William Paiva, and he's got a PhD, and he's the executive director of the Center for Health Systems Innovation at Oklahoma State University. This guy has an amazing background, and you'll learn all about it in a few minutes. But why I initially thought to bring him on this program is because he and his team, they have a ton of data, really, an insane amount, and they got it through a means that is totally unique to them. But they're also developing predictive tools. They're publishing studies. They're working on algorithms. They're working with analytics, machine learning. All the stuff that we say is changing healthcare at large. But what they're really trying to do is to change healthcare in rural and Native American communities. So, welcome to Databook.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here today. I'm excited to tell you the story of the Oklahoma State Center for Health Systems Innovation. So, thank you.
All right, William, let's start this off with a bang that I think will really grab our listeners. Your organization got a huge donation of data from Neil Patterson. He's a co-founder of Cerner, of course, the great EHR giant. What did you get and how did you get it?
Neil Patterson is actually a graduate of Oklahoma State University, and he founded Cerner Corporation as the founding CEO in the 70s. And unfortunately, Neil passed away last summer due to complications of cancer. And so we lost one of the great visionaries in the healthcare informatic space. And so what Neil did for Oklahoma State University, his alma mater, was he envisioned this center called the Center for Health Systems Innovation, which he really wanted to focus on how do we actually innovate in healthcare kind of broadly. He didn't really have a specific mandate. But to kind of get the center going and to really provide some foundational assets from which to build, he really donated two things. He provided a capital investment that provided some seed money, but more importantly, he provided a data set. And as you indicated, it's a data set that we're really blessed to have. It's a data set with 63 million patients in it. And yes, I said 63 million, not 6.3, but 63 million patients in it that's been collected over the last 18 years. And it comes from about 820 hospitals around the United States that are contributing or have agreed to contribute their data to this database. Now, by the time it comes to us, it's de-identified and HIPAA compliant. So I don't have identifying information on the patients. Every patient's given a unique identifier, which is really good because we do a lot of longitudinal work. So being able to understand patients longitudinally over that time, even though they've been de-identified, is important. And the other thing that's really exciting about it is it's all clinical data. So there are lots of really large claims data sets from payers, for instance, the Medicare claim sets, Medicaid claim sets, some of the private plan claim sets. But ours is all clinical data. So I have all the back end clinical information, the laboratory information, pharmacy, admission, discharge, clinical events. So yes, it's an exciting data set that really kind of leapfrogged or allowed our center to leapfrog and accelerate pretty rapidly.
What is your center focusing on exactly? And what are you doing with all of this really valuable data?
Neil kind of enabled this center called the Center for Health Systems Innovation, but he didn't have necessarily a specific vision for where he wanted us to focus and, quote, innovate in healthcare. So we spent the first part of our journey, which really started about 3.5, almost 4 years ago. So we're relatively young in terms of innovation center. So he really was kind of a wide open sheet of paper. But what we started to do was to say, where do we want to focus? And we ended up pointing our crosshairs at rural healthcare. And we picked rural healthcare for a number of reasons that we can go into later, but most of which focus on really an unmet need in rural healthcare. So a lot of the work we use with our data set is how do we develop tools to improve rural healthcare and really help the primary care physician that's sitting in rural America dealing with significant healthcare challenges. So those are the kinds of projects that we're focused on, is really, because we can use the data for anything. I mean, you can imagine that kind of a data set, you basically do whatever you wanted, but we have to be very focused. We decided to focus on how do we use the data to develop tools to focus in rural healthcare.
How does the work that you and your colleagues do, you know, healthcare innovations, care delivery for rural and Native American populations, how do those two things tie together?
So one of the things we wanted to make sure we built within the center, and we're very passionate about, is to make sure that we built both an innovation center and an implementation center, because we wanted to make sure that whatever we innovated, we actually also implemented, because we didn't want to just innovate, publish, move on to the next issue. So we built really two arms of the center. We built an innovation center to focus on rural healthcare, and then we built a whole implementation network that allows us to actually implement a lot of our innovations in the field. So let me give you a couple of real-world examples, because I think it's sometimes, when I tell the story of the data set we have, sometimes people hear or think, wow, that's a really big data set. But it's kind of like telling a little kid, there's a big pile of sand over there, go play in it. And the kid's first response is, wow, that is a big pile of sand, we'll go play in it. But sometimes you have to help them figure out how do you actually play in a pile of sand. So if you're a rural primary care doc and practicing in rural America, and one of the major challenges in rural healthcare is diabetes. And it's also true internationally. I mean, diabetes is a big problem internationally. If you live long enough with diabetes, you'll eventually have three microvascular complications that will likely materialize in some order. The first is diabetic retinopathy. It's the leading cause of blindness. The second is diabetic nephropathy. It's the leading cause of kidney failure. And then that diabetic neuropathy, which is the leading cause of non-traumatic lower extremity amputation. The big challenge in rural America is there are no ophthalmologists in rural America. There are no nephrologists in rural America. There are no neurologists in rural America to deal with eye issues, to deal with kidney issues, to deal with peripheral limb issues. So we decided to do, as we said, okay, can we take this data set and develop predictive tools that will allow a primary care doc to predict which of those diabetic patients are likely to progress to diabetic retinopathy, diabetic nephropathy, diabetic neuropathy? And so that's an exciting example of being able to develop tools out of the data that we can put in the hands of primary care docs to manage those in environments where you don't have those specialists present. So why do we care? Well, if you look at rural markets, only about 10% of the patients ultimately end up in a ophthalmic environment to get their eyes read for diabetic retinopathy. So there's the need. So these kinds of predictive analytic tools is exactly what we need to help bridge that chasm.
So I heard that you want to make Oklahoma the Silicon Valley of health data analytics. What do you mean by that? And why do you want to do it there, of all places?
There's really two things I would like to become the Silicon Valley of. The first is I want to become the Silicon Valley of rural healthcare. And the second is I want to become the Silicon Valley of health data analytics. Rural health is actually the largest health disparity area in the country. I mean, if you think about it, 20% of our population, or 60 million people, are living in rural America dealing with inadequate healthcare. There's a lack of primary care in rural healthcare. There's a lack of subspecialists in rural healthcare. There's lack of technology layers in rural healthcare. So for all of those reasons, it's actually our largest health disparity area. We love talking about health disparities around the country, but the reality is rural is actually the largest health disparity. And it takes an innovation center like ours to focus on it, because most entrepreneurs and innovators generally are not focused on rural healthcare. Most innovators are focused on urban healthcare. So it's not only a health disparity area, it's underserved from an entrepreneurial perspective. So my first focus is to focus on making our center the Silicon Valley of rural healthcare innovation. And then the second is to make our center one of the Silicon Valleys of health analytics. Do I believe we'll be the only Silicon Valley of health analytics? Absolutely not. I mean, it's a brand new field. It's a big field. There's lots of people's focus on it. Do I think we'll be one of the major players? Absolutely. And the reason I think we'll be one of the major players is we were blessed with a unique asset that was given to us 5 or so years ago, long before this industry really got very hot, and have actually been able to accelerate our work pretty quickly. And the other benefit of our data, quite honestly, is we haven't had to deal with a lot of the interoperability issues, a lot of the privacy issues, et cetera, because that's already been taken care of us. So we really do have a data set that we can immediately start into, whereas I think a lot of institutions out there are still just struggling with basic privacy and interoperability issues. So because of that, I think we've got a head start that'll continue to serve us well going forward.
All right. Okay. So I get why rural healthcare needs something like the Center for Health Systems Innovation. But what is it about the rural market that is so good for the center and other health tech innovations?
Prior to actually running this center, I was a venture capitalist for almost 20 years and actually still am involved in venture capital. But when I put my venture capital hat on and I put my center innovation hat on, what I've actually learned, which has really been a real eye-opener, which I didn't expect, but when I was a venture capitalist, one of the major challenges when you're an entrepreneur or a venture capitalist funding entrepreneurial ventures is often that innovation, especially service delivery model innovations or new technologies that are going to change the way we deliver healthcare, often struggle to get adopted in urban settings. And why is that? Well, the reason is a couple of fold. Often those new delivery models, often those new technologies that are going to enable new ways of delivering healthcare, the incumbents that are entrenched often, especially if it's going to challenge their market, will fight back, right? There'll be an amazing amount of headwinds and blowbacks in the urban markets because you're violating the status quo. The second is often those urban markets are so unique. You know, what I learned as a venture capitalist is we would deploy a new service delivery model, let's say in Atlanta. And we're like, great, worked in Atlanta. Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. And then we went to Jacksonville, Florida. What we realized is the market in Jacksonville, Florida was so much different than the Atlanta market in terms of how it was architected, because largely that's driven by who has the power among the payer, the provider, the employers. And each market is so different that even moving urban market to urban market is sometimes a challenge because of the structure. Then when I got into rural, what I discovered is the need in rural market and rural healthcare is so great that all these other issues, these turf issues, these social issues, the incumbent issues, largely fall by the wayside.
So in what ways do you envision the center evolving over the years, whether it's in the near or distant future?
We're focused on rural healthcare, and we're trying to address the rural plight of 60 million people around the entire United States. Obviously, we do a lot of work within Oklahoma because it's in our own backyard, but we're starting to expand some of the work that we've done across the United States, and we're starting to do more work outside of the state of Oklahoma. Now, once again, we're only 3.5 years old, so we're relatively new. But one of the things that I think is actually really exciting about this center long term, not sure when we're actually going to get there, I think it's actually going to be sooner rather than later, is if you look at the international healthcare challenges, and I say this from experience, I spent 3 years in China, for instance, deploying spine, orthopedic, and cardiac centers from the north of China all the way to the south of China from east to west. And so I have a lot of familiarity of the Chinese healthcare market, and then worked in Europe and the UK as well in a past life. And so I have a lot of international healthcare experience. If you look at the challenges that are resident in rural healthcare, they almost map one-to-one to the challenges I saw in international healthcare. And you're dealing often with patient populations like in the rural markets that we see internationally that can sometimes be older, sicker, and under and uninsured internationally as well as in rural. So if you check in a few years from now, and I think it'll probably happen sooner rather than later, don't be surprised if we've actually started to take some of the work we've done in the rural markets within Oklahoma and the United States and begin to move internationally to deal with some of the international healthcare challenges.
William, thank you so much for joining me today on Databook.
You're welcome, and I'm honored to have done it.
So again, Databook is on vacation until July 20th. We will be up bright and early that morning. And until then, you could check out our work on hcanews.com. When Databook does come back, Tom Castles will be back in the booth with me here at MJH Studios in New Jersey. So I guess you can call this the end of our first season. Quarter's coming to an end, and we are taking a two-week break. This was our 14th episode, and I've loved producing, writing, researching, interviewing for every single one of these. That said, when we come back, I am going to do my best to bring you better stories, to bring you a better podcast. So until then, please check us out, hcanews.com, social, healthcare analytics news, HCA_news. We're on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend. If you haven't listened before, take a journey through the back catalog. And again, I am Jack Murtha, and enjoy your barbecues.